This program is a paid commercial announcement and does not reflect the views of WPHT or its management. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
Hi, everybody. Welcome once again to Recovery Radio, I should say, in the age of the pandemic. I'm your host, Steve Martoreno. We invite you to join us for these programs as we speak to experts in the field of behavioral health. We're looking to generate diverse conversations, meaningful conversations, and education on the issue of substance abuse and mental health, and in particular, how those things are being affected, as everything else is, during the coronavirus crisis. I know that anyone listening to this who has ever had any experience with alcohol disorder, a substance abuse issue with alcohol, someone in their family or personally, has come at some point in contact with Alcohol Anonymous. I mean, it is the best known and probably oldest organization of its type in the world, dedicated to helping people achieve and then maintain long-term sobriety. There are many things about AA that we think we know, and many things that I suspect people have wrong. We have a real great opportunity in the program here to do two things. Perhaps clear up some of the misconceptions and myths that surround AA, and get a little bit of the background of that organization, which, as I said, has helped millions of people over the years. And also get into the weeds on how an organization dedicated to, in effect, creating communities can continue its mission of helping people maintain sobriety in a moment in time when we are separated by necessity and by order in many places. So it's a great opportunity to find out about that. And I couldn't be more delighted to invite our guest to the program. Claire B. is going to be talking to us today. I use her her first name to honor one of the traditions, and we'll find out about that, of AA, and that has to do with anonymity. Claire is the public information director of the Southeastern Pennsylvania Intergroup Association of AA. CPIA is what the short term for all of that is, and we welcome Claire to Recovery Radio. Thank you, Claire, for joining us. I know you couldn't possibly be any busier. Can you give us a little...
Thank you so much for having me.
can you start us off with a little bit about your background, and then we'll get into CPIA?
Sure, I'd be happy to. First I have to say, even though my service position with the Public Information Committee, I am not a specialist or an expert on anything except for my own experience. So no one really speaks on behalf of AA, but I do have some experience on the Public Information Committee trying to get the word out about AA. So my sobriety date is August 24th, 2007, so I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous since then. And probably when I had about 6 or 7 years of sobriety, I really started getting into service beyond the home group. And so now I'm involved with our local intergroup, and I sit on the steering committee and also the website technology committee there. And I'm also involved with my district as an alternate district committee member.
Claire, I want to take a moment to sort of flesh out that that's a disclaimer you gave at the beginning. The reason,
yes.
Yeah, I know, and a lot of people don't understand what that's all about, and I'd like to get shed some light on this. One of the myths of AA. One of the things that's most remarkable, I think, in addition to the work that they do, is this notion that of grassroots creation and activity. This is the least centralized organization of its size, probably in the history of the planet. It's almost as though people are saying,
exactly,
no one's in charge, we all are in charge. Is that pretty much the way AA works?
We all are in charge. Exactly. And the structure, I mean, we are an organization that seeks to have the least amount of organization. So our organization functions like an upside down triangle. All of the authority resides with the individuals in their home groups. And then they will elect a representative that reports to a district committee. That those district committees elect a delegate who reports to the General Service Conference. And so as you go down the triangle, those people answer to the people above them. So really, the individual home groups are autonomous and can decide their own format and how they run their meetings. And the people who serve as trusted servants are really serving those groups and supporting those groups.
So for someone who is not familiar with any of this and wants help and has heard about AA for years, they should not begin their search for how to avail themselves in the traditional way we do. In other words, let's look for somebody who's in charge. Who's the head of AA?
Right.
It doesn't work like that.
No one is in charge.
No one is in charge. Right. It's interesting that a group that has an unbelievable reputation for succeeding in many, many cases, the notion that no one's in charge is so counterintuitive. And one of the most amazing things about AA. So how would it work, for instance, when you were having your problems with alcohol?
Yes.
How did you wind up going to your first meeting?
So fortunately, these days, I mean, you know, in the early days of AA, 30s, 40s, 50s, people didn't know about it. It was just growing. It was in its infancy. And, you know, since I was a child of the 70s and 80s, there was much more knowledge about AA. When I was 10, my mom ended up going to rehab, and I attended my first AA meeting when I was 10 years old at my mom's rehab. So I was given information at that time that this is a family disease and that I could be vulnerable to this. That did not stop me from picking up alcohol. And, you know, as my drinking progressed, people came in and out of my life that were instrumental. I had a very good friend that had been sober for years who modeled for me what it was like to have a life without alcohol. Because there was a long time that I couldn't picture my life with or without alcohol. But in the back of my mind, there was, oh, there are people that actually that live without alcohol and live well. And when it got bad enough for me, and, you know, I did all the things that other people do. I moved around. I changed jobs. I changed relationships. I just didn't want to look at the fact that the underlying problem was my alcohol abuse. I got started with a therapist, and the therapist really saw right through what was going on and said to me very directly, you have got to do something about your drinking. And if you don't, it's just going to keep getting worse. You're going to waste your time and your money. And you can't tackle any of the other problems in your life unless you stop drinking. And that was when I had my moment of clarity. And I came out of that session and immediately called a friend of mine I knew in the program and said, I'm an alcoholic. And he said, do you know what to do? And I said, I think I'm supposed to get to a meeting. And so he guided me to the nearest meeting to where I was. And that was, you know, my first day of sobriety.
Yeah, what was
so
your...
Fortunately, the people that... Oh, sorry.
No. Your reaction to that first meeting, because many people go, I'm in the wrong place. What was your reaction?
I immediately knew I was in the right place.
Uh-huh.
I stayed away for long enough. You know, I gathered enough information about AA before I came in to knew what I was in for. I had tried an Al-Anon meeting years before I came into AA, just to kind of see what went on. I had ordered a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous from eBay and tried to read it on my own. So I kind of did a little bit of field work before I came in. And it had to get bad enough for me that I was willing to do what it took. And by the time I came in at the age of 34, I was absolutely ready to have a change of life.
Before we get into the main issue, actually, of how an organization like AA manages to continue working under these extraordinary circumstances, just a couple of things that people may be confused about with regard to what AA is and what it is not. Is AA a treatment for alcohol abuse or not?
No, we are not a treatment for alcohol abuse. We are, you know, it says it best in our preamble. If you don't mind, I'll read our preamble. It's just a paragraph that sort of explains exactly what we do. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to sobriety, to achieve sobriety. So the way we function is really just one alcoholic talking to another. And we've found that when one alcoholic talks to another, there's something that happens. We can't always explain it, that can help remove the obsession. And then when we get together in a supportive group environment, and you add, you know, working the steps, we have a 12 steps that are suggested, you can really, something miraculous happens where we are able to recover. I mean, it's always contingent upon us not putting alcohol back in our bodies. I mean, we're a program of abstinence. Recovery is through abstinence for us. But just putting down the drink is not enough for many of us to achieve the kind of serenity and freedom that we get through working the 12 steps and being in Alcoholics Anonymous.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and then there's a service component. So the idea is that, you know, I've been through the 12 steps. I've had this spiritual experience. But to maintain my sobriety, I have to work with other alcoholics. I have to constantly be thinking about how I can help others and reaching out my hand to newcomers.
We're talking about AA, its traditions, its history, its mission, the way it operates. There are implications for all of us, ironically, in the condition we find ourselves all in, without regard to substance abuse, in the sense that AA is dedicated to not treating a problem, but building a community of like-minded people who are suffering from the problem. And from that brotherhood or that community building, there is strength in numbers. It's a cliche. We are, and we're going to come back, Claire, on the other side, we are right in that position as a society. We are being told that the way to protect ourselves against this virus is to do, ironically, the opposite of building a community. But it is a community. It's a community of people who are being asked to protect one another by staying apart. It's an interesting kind of dichotomy. We're going to talk more about AA and how it operates under these circumstances as we continue on with Recovery Radio. Please don't go away. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano with you. We're talking with Claire B. Claire is the Public Information Director for CEPIA. That's the Southeastern Pennsylvania Intergroup Association of AA. She is giving us chapter and verse on this renowned organization that helps people struggling with alcohol problems. Claire, I certainly want to get into what's changed here now, but I've talked to many, many people who have availed themselves of AA, and I'm always struck by how easy it has always been for them to find a meeting. My favorite story was with a merchant seaman once who was in here, and he was telling me about his need to get to a meeting while he was in Saudi Arabia. And he said, let me tell you something. You can't find alcohol very easily in the kingdom because, of course, it's banned. But you can find an AA meeting. So AA meetings are everywhere. And traditionally, you found one. You know, you ask someone or you Google where's an AA meeting near me and you found, you know, multitudes of places. And then you just walked in. Well, that's been turned on its head. Tell us what's going on now.
Absolutely. Yeah. There has been a radical change in that. Yes, traditionally, the way we work is that you are directed to a meeting. You're encouraged to go to a meeting. In fact, several meetings, because sometimes you don't hear what you need to at that first meeting. And I always encourage people to try another meeting. You will eventually hear your story. You will find your people. But now we are not able to just walk into a meeting. We are barely able to walk out of our own homes at the moment. And so the way that we can reach out to that person who's still struggling and the newcomer has changed completely. Wonderfully, we have all of this technology. So, you know, people are able to do online searches, go to AA.org or to our website, which is AACPIA.org, try to find meetings. There's now an app for the phone called the Meeting Guide app that I encourage everyone to use to try to find meetings. And we are updating every moment as these meetings go online. And the landscape is changing rapidly. As meetings go online, they set up meetings, they get contact information and passwords and all this. And so, you know, we've always printed a directory of meetings, and at the moment that's just useless,
yeah,
except for our phone number and web address on the front cover. And so our hope is that people are reaching out through technology, that people are calling our phone number and being directed to online meetings. Or, you know, if they call our phone number 24/7, they can talk to another alcoholic, which is a wonderful service. It's just that we've lost that face-to-face. I mean, fortunately, we have video. It's not quite the same, but I'm very hopeful about what I'm seeing happening on the online meeting landscape.
Yeah, I want to find out about that because we know that there...
And we've had...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, we've actually had, there's an AA intergroup that's been in existence for years now. It's aa-intergroup.org, and they've had online meetings from around the world for, I mean, going back some of them 10 years. So it's not brand new technology, but now it's exploded.
I know
so
from,
we've had those established groups, and now there are groups popping up every moment.
I know from the notes that you sent me that that your group, Sepia, and you sit on the steering and information committee about the website technology. So, as you just mentioned, technology has been a tool used by AA for a long time, but not in the profound way it's being moved now. So, is it safe? Am I hearing you correctly that there's been a total shift to online meetings?
As far as I know, I mean, as early as a few weeks ago, as restrictions were getting tighter, some meetings were, you know, at first they said groups of no more than 50 people, and then they said groups of no more than 10 people. And as these different restrictions were happening, we were getting calls to the office by the minute of people that were no longer able to meet because their church said, you know, we don't want to have people gathering here, or... you know, their meeting place just closed entirely. And so we're still trying to do some catch up with what meetings have decided to do. But as far as I know, the vast majority of meetings are now either online or have joined other online meetings. I'm sure there are still alcoholics that are, you know, meeting one-on-one outside, social distancing, but not necessarily in an organized fashion.
I mean, certainly AA supports all of the distancing requirements and recommendations.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let me ask you this, in your experience, how upsetting can it be for someone who has regularly attends meetings and has been for years if they feel that they're not going to be able to get to a meeting? How upsetting is that to someone suffering from this problem?
I think it can be profoundly upsetting. I think it can be profound. For many of us, myself included, because I had mentioned our CPS started an online meeting about 6 months ago with people in mind that are, this is part of our HUSH committee, which is helping unite the sick, shut-in, hospitalized, and homebound. And so we set up a meeting for people who were already isolated in their homes or in nursing facilities or were recovering from a health issue, or even people that were on house arrest, to have a regular weekly meeting. And so, you know, we started that 6 months ago, and I've been attending that. So for me, the transition has been easy, because I did get, you know, my feet wet with this online format and have kind of gotten used to it. But for some people, and it also depends on where you are in your length of sobriety, how secure you're feeling in your sobriety. I mean, to all of a sudden not be able to attend face-to-face meetings can be really traumatic for some people, and we're constantly trying to reach out to those people by phone, by internet, by updating our website, and hoping that they are able to stay connected.
Claire B. is our guest on the telephone. We're talking about staying sober, working the program in the age of the coronavirus. This is Recovery Radio. Stay with us. We have more. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. We'll return to our guest in just a second. A reminder that the program has been for many years now underwritten, supported financially by Retreat Behavioral Health. They are a terrific partner in the program. I tell you every week, this is not an infomercial for them, although they are a renowned organization helping people with both substance abuse and mental health issues, but they sponsor this program for informational and educational purposes, which, of course, has never been more important than right now. So when I give you Retreat's number, it's in that spirit. You have questions, comments, anything that has to do with either substance abuse or behavioral health, mental health issues, you can call and get somebody who will give you some help. Retreat Behavioral Health, 855-859-8810. That's 855-859-8810. From the Southeast Pennsylvania Intergroup Association of AA, we have their director, Claire B. She's really filling us in expertly on what goes on during a crisis like the coronavirus for people who are trying to maintain sobriety through AA. The shift, so it's so heartening to hear that there's at least one organization that was ready for this and didn't have to play catch up, and that's what we've been hearing about AA and tech, the use of technology. Nevertheless, Claire, I'm guessing that there are very many unintended consequences of trying to do something like community support, building people, bringing them together when they're being told to isolate. So the use of technology presents as many, I guess, benefits as problems. What are some of the things you have to deal with when you use technology in this context?
I would say, you know, before the pandemic, when we would attend regular meetings, in face-to-face meetings, the home group could communicate to its members and to its visitors the traditions and how to stay safe and all these kinds of things that we're not able to do necessarily in an organized fashion with online meetings. And so, you know, we hope that people are directed to, you know, AA.org, AACPA.org, where they can get really good information about it. But for the newcomer, just picking a random meeting and attending that meeting remotely, you know, there's the hope that there are some people there with some good sobriety that can kind of communicate to them about how they can stay safe online, protect their anonymity if they wish, those sorts of things.
Well, I want to get to the two issues. When you talk about keeping them safe and maintaining anonymity, that sounds like it might be impossible in a video context. What do you mean when you communicating context about keeping people safe from just online abuse? Is that what you mean?
Well, there's a steep learning curve with all of this, and you know, these online platforms that we've had to use were not built for AA, so they don't have privacy and security built into them. In fact, I think they were all kind of built for the business environment, and they assume that these businesses have their own IT departments, and you know, mm-hmm. And there's a number of these platforms: BlueJeans, Zoom, Google Hangouts, GoToMeeting, all of these, and each one has sort of a little bit of a different privacy agreement. Each one has a little bit of a different default settings, and it's changing. In fact, in just the past couple of days, I believe one of those platforms has changed their privacy agreement, has changed, you know, now they're requiring passwords, which is kind of causing pandemonium because they didn't used to, and now to join a meeting, you do need a password. And so I'm not sure how all the dust is going to settle after all this happens, because it's just such a rapidly changing landscape. But, you know, I encourage people just to find out what the privacy agreement is on these platforms. If you're hosting the meeting, to make sure that the default settings are as strict as they can possibly be, that it's not being recorded, that there's, you know, no screen sharing, disable the chat if you want to. I personally remind people that, you know, if you are in a video conference and your full name is shown, someone could certainly look you up. They could screen grab your picture. And so there's more responsibility on the individual to protect themselves mm-hmm. than we would have, you know, in a face-to-face meeting in a home group, where we can, as a group, kind of collectively educate and protect and have a group conscience to decide how things are handled. Whereas there's much more personal responsibility now for your safety and security.
Yeah. So how would someone who wants to either start a meeting, host a meeting, begin the process of finding all of that stuff out? Would they call AA, or do they call the platform they want to use? How does that process work?
I can only speak for the Southeastern Pennsylvania Intergroup Association, and we on our website, which is aasepia.org, right on our homepage, there are links to all the Philadelphia area online meetings, all of the worldwide online meetings and phone meetings. And we also have a page on our website that gives you sort of suggestions on how to set up an online meeting, and then some common experience about best practices. And that can be a really helpful place to start.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would go right to the platform. Mm-hmm. I might gather information from how other groups are doing it first.
Yeah, well, as you pointed out, some of those platforms are having to catch up. I focus on Zoom because Zoom was one of those tech ideas that once it became a real thing, I'm sure the creators went, this will be great fun. Families will be able to do this, and business meetings will be able to do that. And I didn't give 1 minute's thought to, you know, the trolls out there, the very strange people who get enjoyment
right.
out of disrupting anything. And, you know, it's benign. It's benign when it's, you know, the Justin Bieber fans that are getting, it's not benign, but it's not harmful. And now they're interrupting. Now they are breaking into everything. And certainly AA's online effort has been plagued by some of these people. Is it true that one of the best practices that you guys recommend is that somebody be assigned a sort of virtual bouncer role?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, some of the meetings I've attended, the ones that work the best, they have a host and a co-host. And the co-host is usually there just hovering over the delete button, you know, ready to block someone that might try to disrupt the meeting, switch off screen sharing, switch off the chat. They're just, you know, making sure that the people attending that meeting are free from harassment, and if it should start to happen, they can bounce them right out of the meeting immediately.
Yeah, you know, so if I understand that correctly, the whole meeting doesn't have to shut down. As long as somebody's in charge of watching the disruptive person, they can just be eliminated from the meeting, just cut off, and the meeting can continue. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. And when these meetings first started, I mean, just a few weeks ago, they did have some troubles where, you know, if someone could take over screen sharing, they were not able to recover the meeting because it was just kind of hijacked. And people are getting savvy to that now and know that if you have a host and a co-host and you set the default settings and have control, it's much easier. So if someone tries to disrupt, it's much more difficult for them. A lot of meetings are now locking their doors metaphorically after 5 minutes, so you can't just pop in and pop out. Once you're in, you can stay in as long as you're not disruptive. Otherwise, you're blocked or you're sent to a waiting room, and it's becoming much more of a controlled and safe environment than it was just a few weeks ago.
And we've all had to learn new skills in a very, very steep leaning curve. You mentioned best practices for establishing these. Are they on the CPIA website where people can see them?
They are.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do. If you go to aasepia.org, you'll find a page that we have there that talks about setting up online meetings and best practices. In fact, it's aasepia.org/set-up-online-AA-meetings.
Okay.
If you want to go directly to that page.
if you're able to do that, that's going to be very helpful. Let me ask you about it, because one of the bedrock principles of AA has always been that groups ought to be fully self-supporting. And in the old days, which was, 2 months ago, a basket would be passed around the room and people would make whatever contributions they could. Is there a virtual basket now?
Right. There is. You know, we do, as you mentioned, we do have a seventh tradition that states that Alcoholics Anonymous is self-supporting through our own contributions. So we decline all outside contributions. It's actually one of these organizations that's amazing to me, that you can't just, if you're just an average person and you send a donation to AA, it will be politely returned to you, because we only want money from our own alcoholics in the fellowship, and then there's a cap on that. So have, you know, some meetings have gone to a digital basket. One of the meetings I regularly attend has had, you can donate electronically, but the vast majority of meetings I still think are on a cash system where they collect money, and that money goes to pay the rent for, you know, the church basement that they're meeting in, the coffee, sometimes for literature for newcomers, and sometimes to support one of their elected members going to a district meeting or to a conference. The money collected beyond that is divided among various AA entities, local intergroup, local general service office, and then AA World Services. And this is really important money. I mean, groups that just cover their own expenses aren't truly self-supporting, because they're not giving money to support their listing on, you know, the websites or the production of literature and pamphlets and all these kinds of things. So we really do want to continue to be self-supporting, our goal of being self-supporting. So when all these meetings first went online, we had not caught up to that yet. There wasn't a way for many of them to contribute a couple of dollars. And now many meetings are establishing a digital basket. And again, there are various platforms for that as well. And, you know, we internally debate, you know, what are the best ones to use? What are the best ones for people to access? But we do seem to be catching up, and many of these meetings now do offer a digital basket.
Claire Bee, our guest, she's Public Information Director for SEPIA, Southeastern Pennsylvania's Intergroup Association of AA. She's giving us chapter and verse, and brilliantly, I might say, on how this organization is operating during this crisis. This is Recovery Radio. Stay with us. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Claire Bee has been our guest. She uses one name because that is a tradition in AA. Anonymity, it's important. And she is the, I can tell you, she has a great title for someone using only one name. She is the Public Information Director for SEPIA, Southeastern Pennsylvania's Intergroup Association of AA. And she's been telling us how this organization, I got to tell you, pivoted as well as one can imagine from the situation that exists before the virus and the situation that is existing right now. Claire, before we let you go in this final segment, anyone who's looked at the alcohol abuse understands, or any substance abuse, but alcohol abuse, certainly, it is often described as a disease that isolates. It drives people further and further away from their family and loved ones to a lonely place that only exacerbates the problem. So that's the nature of the disease, to isolate. And here we are in, as we've been saying the whole show, being told mandatorily that we have to isolate. There are people who are at particular risk and who are still suffering from this turn of events, and I'm thinking about seniors and shut-ins. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on with them?
Yes. You know, my great concern is always reaching the alcoholic that still suffers. And our Public Information Committee was already very concerned about the older alcoholic and a demographic that may not be mobile, may not be able to get out to meetings, not have the same kind of access that others have. And just last year, we launched a senior citizen outreach initiative where we did a direct mailing to about 170 senior centers, nursing homes, long care facilities, retirement centers, with a letter and some basic AA information, including a pamphlet that our General Service Office publishes called AA for the Older Alcoholic, Never Too Late. And, you know, as we were talking about all of that, the HUSH Committee, which is helping unite sick, shut-in, hospitalized, and homebound, established an online meeting with tech support, which was the big thing, because we know that some of the older alcoholics may not be as tech savvy, may not have smartphones, may not have internet access. And so our hope was that we could reach some of these people, get them set up with some online meetings so that they would have regular access to a weekly online meeting. And we've done that, and we do have some that have been attending regularly for months now, which is wonderful. So, you know, our sincere hope is that some of these people at least have access to a phone and can call our phone number, which is answered 24 hours a day, so that we can get them, you know, some relief in the way of talking to another alcoholic and get them connected.
There are so many reasons why seniors and their families, you know, have to find good nursing home facilities. Certainly in the context of what's going on right now, one of the things that might be wise to ask is that, you know, mom or dad needs to go to meetings and to ask the facility, do you have some way to facilitate that? That's probably a good thing to ask, right?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and before the COVID situation, we routinely take meetings into, you know, hospitals, mm-hmm. prisons, rehabs, and our HUSH committee does take smaller commitments into people that are in nursing homes and retirement communities that are not able to regularly travel out to meetings. So, yes, help is available. They just need to contact us, and we can get them set up with that.
Claire, thanks so much for your time. I mean, we began by talking about the essence of AA as a decentralized, grassroots, bottom-up organization. And the fact that they mobilized across the board so swiftly and were ready to pivot from, you know, face-to-face contact to this brave new world we're now is completely remarkable. Is there any sense that an unintended consequence of this is that more people may be inclined to get involved with AA in this new way?
Absolutely.
I mean, I can see some people who have stayed away from AA because the thought of going into a room full of strangers and looking at them was so difficult they never did it, but yeah. Now they don't have to do that, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm incredibly hopeful, and what I'm seeing is just wonderful. And I know for me, I mean, if this had been around long before I finally came into AA, I would have dipped my toe, I think. I might have gone on and seen what this was all about and observed a couple meetings and gathered some information and maybe gotten a little bit of relief and a bit of the message of hope in recovery. I'm very hopeful for that. In fact, there's been some discussions that, you know, the trolls and the people disrupting these meetings, I mean, I could imagine that some of them will actually come, you know, with malicious intent and hear something that maybe they need to hear. Mm. It's also given us much more regular access. I can say for myself, I've attended more meetings in the past 2 weeks than I have in the past several months because it's just so easy. And you can connect with alcoholics in other states and other countries and at different times of the day and night. And I mean, it's really opened up a greater world of alcoholic fellowship and recovery that was more limited before.
Claire, thanks so much for your time. I know, as we've been telling you, that you are affiliated with the Southeast Pennsylvania Group. Efforts like this are going on all over the country, and this program can be heard in lots of places. But with regard to people in the Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware area, give CPS number again and tell people what that is.
Yes. This is a CPS phone number. It's answered 24/7 by another alcoholic. It's 215-923-7900. And they can direct you to online meetings. They can just discuss what's going on with you. Help is available 24/7 at that phone number.
Claire, thanks so much. I know you're very busy and good for you. It's just great what you guys are doing. We hope to have you back again real, real soon.
Thank you so much.
Claire B. from Sepia. Thank you all for joining us on Recovery Radio. It's again been brought to you by Retreat Behavioral Health. Again, you need information, you need help, 855-859-8810. 855-859-8810. Stay safe, everybody. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and does not reflect the views of WPHT or its management. Today's program has been pre-recorded.